Blog Talk Radio. city mounted as the floating palace neared her European port. Having crossed from New York to Bishop's Rock off the English coast in 3 days, 10 hours, and 40 minutes, the liner United States established a new Atlantic speed record July 6, 1952. Cheering crowds at Southampton hailed the American ship that had clipped 10 hours from the transatlantic mark set by Britain's own Queen Mary. Then westbound, the United States knifing through the Atlantic for her second record crossing. It was noted by the builders of the ship that in the event of necessity for emergency conversion to military service, the United States could transport 14,000 men, or virtually a full division, 10,000 miles without putting into port for food, fresh water, or fuel. But for the crew and officials and passengers aboard the liner, the greatest moment was now at hand. United States was reaching Ambrose Lightship outside New York with the Blue Riband of the Atlantic, having made the return trip in a record 3 days, 12 hours, 12 minutes. And saluting the ship whose maiden voyage shattered Atlantic speed marks going over and coming back. Of the century and beyond, Great Britain and Germany dominated leadership in fast Atlantic crossings. Now, for the first time in almost 100 years, the speed crown was claimed by the Stars and Stripes. New York, home port for many of the greatest ships on the oceans, really put on a show. A big broom symbolized the sweep of the Blue Ribbon Speed Trophy by the $70 million United States. America's first lady of the high seas.
Good afternoon and welcome to America's Disabled Veterans in Action. This is Dr. George Anderson speaking. I'm here this afternoon with Marilyn Weiss, and we are talking about veterans benefits this afternoon. It is Wednesday, the 18th of November. We've got 12 more days in the month of November to go. We're a week out from Thanksgiving. I'd like to remind everybody at the end of your giving to please remember to give to both the SS United States, the Save That Great Ocean Liner, but also remember the voice and ears of the veteran community, ADVIA. We are a nonprofit organization, but we are on the air due to private contributions. We have not asked for very many public contributions, but we are a nonprofit. So, in your end of year giving, would you consider giving to ADVIA? We'll be greatly appreciative. That being said, we have our hostess with the mostest on benefits, our chief benefits specialist, Marilyn Weiss. How are you, Marilyn?
Hey, how you doing? Hey, how you doing?
Doing pretty good. And yourself?
Oh, I'm hanging in there.
That's good. That's what we want to hear. You know, Marilyn, I got some good news. Do you ever remember a time when we, in the middle of the night, would not have anybody on our page? You remember when I would tell you that in the middle of the night we were struggling when we first started to even see 100 people overnight on our page? Do you remember those days? Huh?
In the beginning when we first started out.
Yeah, in the beginning when we first started out. Well, as of last night, we had, at the lowest point of the evening, 2,519 people on our page. We are very honored by them. You know, I mean, we're well on our way to 29,500, and that is an amazing number.
Wow.
So I just want to tell everybody thank you.
Wow.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah. We even you know, when we're on the air, we're breaking 12,000 readers at one time. You know, when we're on the air, it used to be just a couple of weeks ago, we just broke 10,000. But now when we're on the air, we have over 12,300 people on our website, on the air, listening to the words that we say. We're still reaching 250,000 people per week. You know, and we're doing the job. We're doing the job, folks. We're making sure that Congress is aware that we as a community have needs that need to be addressed, whether it's getting proper medication or being able to have access to doctors. You know, it's something else. 2559 was the lowest that we had on our website last night. We broke 12,000 yesterday at 4 o'clock at showtime.
Wow.
And it stayed there until after we went off the air at 5:30. So we are doing something amazing because we're breaking 10 o'clock at 7 o'clock in the morning, your time. And we're not losing the 10,000 until after 8 p.m. So people are listening to ADVIA and they're getting the news and information and sharing this news and information with veterans and their families. So we want to say thank you for all of that. So that's what I have today. Our Brooklyn Navy Yard call-in number is 347-884-8078, 347-884-8078. Well, Marilyn, what you got planned for us?
I'm looking now because I think I may have found something. I was looking on the life insurance. I was looking on the really on the veterans insurance as far as life insurance because I had a question on that today on veterans life insurance, and they have several types of veterans life insurance. They have one called Soldiers Group Life Form, Family Soldiers Group Life Forms, Veterans Group. I don't know. I got to go piece by piece because I don't know anything about that. So, but they have the okay. One of the type is the service group life insurance. And some usually you get in the. Now I thought you get this on active duty. So, but it's under veterans. It was new to me. It's abbreviated FGLV 8286, Service Men Group Life Insurance Election and Certificate. And the use of this form is to reduce or decline the description. Use this form to reduce or decline if you want to stop it or designate or upgrade the beneficiary on your Soldiers Group Life policy, restore or increase Soldiers Group Life coverage when it has previously been reduced or declined. I didn't know that. Because I thought, they also have a Soldiers Group Life 8286F, which is the supplemental benefits, supplementary Soldiers Group Life Insurance Beneficiary Form. So if you want to use this to designate additional beneficiaries for Soldiers Group Life. Now you're just plane flying over. I don't know what's going on. But you can find out a lot about this under the VA website, too, under the Veterans Affairs website. But I was just going to go a little bit into it because I really don't know enough to talk about it. The only one I do know about is the Veterans life insurance for veterans, life insurance for service-connected disability veterans. I know about that. And that one, I know it's a 20, the form number is 29-4364. Application for service disabled insurance. And you use this form to apply for service disabled veterans insurance. You must apply for this insurance within 2 years of the date of receiving benefits of your new service connected disability. So if you got right now, you're currently being compensated for back pain, and you've been compensated for more than 2 years, you cannot file a claim for it. But, and then let's say after the 2 or 3 years, and you haven't filed a claim because, number one, no one explains this to us. So if you have not filed a claim for it, and you get a new compensated disability such as depression, now you have 2 years from the date that you were newly compensated with depression to file a life insurance for service-connected disability. Now, if you want to get add more insurance, you have to do it within the 2 years, or you got to wait till a new disability. And aside from the 2 years, the VA will, at one time, they were giving you $10,000 free, waived $10,000, but now I read it went up to $30,000 now, that they're waiving. So you can get $30,000 worth of free life insurance due to your service-connected disability of 10% or more. So, and it may start at 0%. I would try it at 0. I haven't had anybody come to me requesting for it yet. So, and they got Veterans Group Life Insurance. I haven't.
Hey, Veterans Group Life Insurance.
Yeah, Veterans Group Life Insurance is you can apply for group life insurance. You can, and that's done on and that comes on the service group life form 8714. So, and like I said, the other two, I don't know enough about them to talk about them. Because they have other ones, they have National Service Life Insurance, and this application for conversion, which is on the 29-0152, you use this form to confirm all or part of to convert all or part of your term insurance into permanent plan insurance. And they got one application for supplementary service disabled veterans life insurance, and that's on the 21-0188. And you use this form to apply for supplementary service disability insurance. And you must have been approved for a waiver for premium of service. Oh, I'm going to try this one. Oh, okay. Service disabled veterans. So veterans, if you've been approved, if you got the waiver, because that's all I got is the waiver of the premiums for service disabled veterans. I mean, veterans with service-connected disability insurance to be eligible for it. Fillable. Oh, well, we're going to definitely do this one, and I can update y'all on that one. So, That I found that tonight, moving on that.
Wow. Well, that's a good one. 20 minutes after the hour, and I want to give out the Brooklyn Navy Yard calling number
347-884-8078. I'm done this one. I don't know if you guys are familiar for the pre-discharge, filing a claim for VA benefits 6 months before getting out of the service. You know that, Dr. George, that you can file for VA benefits 6 months to the date of your, if you already know the date that you're being discharged from the reserve, from the separation from active duty, reserve, National Guard, then you can file claims for benefits.
Your disability?
Your benefits for VA, yes. So, and I've already done this before, this one. I've done my first one a couple months ago. But it has benefits delivery at discharge. Benefits delivery at discharge, and it's abbreviated BDD, allows service members to support a claim for disability compensation 60 to 100 days prior to separation, retirement, or release from active duty or demobilizing, and can help you receive your VA disability benefits sooner with a goal of within 60 days after being released from the service, 3 months. 60 days is 2 months after getting out of the military.
Right. That's right.
And so you have to be benefits delivery and discharge requires a minimum of 60 days to allow sufficient time to complete the medical exam process, which may involve multiple specialties clinics prior to the separation from service. If you are closer than 60 days to separation from service, you can submit a quick start claim. It's available nationwide and open to all servicemen or full-time active duty, including members of the National Guard and Reserve, members of the Coast Guards. If they're getting all these branches, you can apply for your VA benefits. And they're trying to do that. Comes under PEPLO. And so, and then it said the requirement to participate is, some of the questions are being asked is, when and where can I plead all the phases of my VA DOD medical separation exam at the point of separation prior to release from service? When must I submit my service treatment records to the VA at the same time the claim is submitted? Well, DOD is automatically sending service records to VA anyway. That's so that VA will have this. But if you're doing a separation physical during that time and I don't know how it's going to take them 2 months to look at the whole medical file. I ain't got that happening, especially if you've been in the service 30 years. So don't hold your breath on that one. Really common sense here. So, and if you are on a military interstate installation, contact your LOSA, Transition Assistant Officer, or ACAP Center. Army only has the ACAP. To schedule appointments and to attend VA briefings and learn how to initiate your claim, you can also call VA. Wrong answer, because they will never. You can call them at 1-800-827-1000. but I wish you luck because they will never answer the phone. So you should get that part.
Unless you call at 5:30 in the morning. If you call at 5:30 in the morning on the Pacific Coast, you may get through, but otherwise you're going to be waiting.
You can forget that idea. But if there's anybody listening that fits this, make sure when you file your claim that you put a claim in for everything under the sun. Everything. And if you got anything, like if you got high blood pressure, now you got a heart condition, or let's say you got kidney problems, then you put your kidney problems in as well. And you also can put your kidney conditions secondary to high blood pressure. And you can put claim in for high blood pressure secondary to stresses of PTSD or the stress of being in the service. That's the time you do it. Yeah. But be careful when you're putting in these claims that they're talking about, because when you do that, and you've had the, because you're supposed to be compensated. If you do the claim within a year of your discharge from the military, you're supposed to be compensated back to the effective date of diagnosis. So that's some information. If you've been in 20 years, you got diagnosed with high blood pressure, and 15 years ago, they're supposed to take you back 15 years. That comes under the effective date of claim per Title 38. So, you know, and then if you had high blood pressure for 15 years, all of a sudden they done got it under control, you may have a problem getting your benefits. Matter of fact, you will have a problem because the condition has improved. So, and while in the pre-discharge program, you may apply for other benefits such as voc rehab and employment, education, loan gratuity. Good. Guarantee, I'm sorry. GUARANTY, whatever that means.
Come on. No, I didn't say anything.
And VA returning service members of OEL, OIL, and seamless transitioning from additional information. So, if you're getting out and you have not retired and you come out on 100% from VA, you then qualify for the the retired military ID card, as long as it's permanent total. Or you can't work anymore. If you're 100% permanent total, you can get the retired ID card if you're not already retired coming off active duty. And same thing for if you've already been out of the service 100 years and you become 100, all of a sudden you become 100% permanent total, you now qualify for the tax breaks, the veterans, if you're not retired, the retirement cards. If you're 70%, 60%, huh? If you are 70% rated, 100%, if you're 70% rated, 100% unemployability, and it's permanent, then you can get the data and plus the tax. A lot of states give breaks on property taxes. A lot of states give tax breaks on vehicle. I mean, they do waive of vehicle registration. The District of Columbia has just joined that process. If you're 100% permanent total in Washington, D.C., and you take bring your award letter saying you're 100% permanent, or 100% from Veterans Affairs, you will no longer pay registration fee. Bring it on the next time that your vehicle is due for registration renewal. That's the only time you can bring it. They're not going to accept it before. So you have to bring it the day you go to renew your license. Your tag. And Maryland and Virginia, I'm maybe the same way. You just bring your award letter, and they at the time that your tags are due to be renewed. So a lot of states are waiving that for veterans. So that's just FYI. You get, for those that are coming out of the service, well, that's those that are coming out of the military. I want to say, I don't want to give it out right. I know if you're in combat, you get 5 years of free medical treatment. I'm not sure if it's for non-combat. I haven't heard it. But, like, my thing is try your hand, you never know. Try it, go and try it. Try to apply for benefits. I mean, the free health care. And then, well, if you're in a situation where you get out and you don't have no income, no medical insurance, you automatically get free lifetime, more than 5 years. Whether you combat or non-combat, you don't have no medical insurance, you get free medical care and treatment if you're eligible for care at the VA Medical Center. And for those veterans that have mental conditions that got dishonorably discharged, you can request for a medical, they're upgrading dishonorable discharge if they're not under court martial, general or otherwise. Then it's hard to get general court martial's upgrade. But if you just got a dishonorable discharge, other than honorable discharge, because of you can possibly have them upgraded if you have any mental disorder and you're currently in treatment with a current diagnosis. So, and if you've ever, if you're filing a claim with Veterans Affairs, you don't tell them your disability did not occur in the service. You let them tell you. And then you start, and you do a disagreement. You never let them, you don't volunteer that, oh, I didn't get this illness and this foot condition, plantar fasciitis. I didn't get that from the service. Really? How do you know that? Because a lot of people do get that. They don't know what it's called because their feet be burning and hurting like the devil, you know. Because sometimes the stress of flat feet can do it because the constant of the arching dropping can cause that pain and discomfort. But a lot of marching can cause it. A lot of road marches will do it for you. Running in PT. I don't care what disability is. You don't voluntarily tell these people it did not occur in the service. I had it in the service. You never change. You never, never, ever, ever do that, people. If you want a good way to get denied with no possibility of being able to fight it, go in there and volunteer. Oh, I didn't get this in the service. You don't know. You let them tell you. Now that you know you've been out the service a year and you get into a car accident and that's a bad one or whatever, yeah, that you can't fight it. But I mean, really, you don't do that. I mean, I had a veteran to tell me that today, and I don't know what planet he was from. I was very irritated with that. And that's a good way to get your case denied, and you can't come back and do a whole lot of fighting to say, oh, well, yeah, I did. But when you volunteer, they ain't going to look it up. It might be in your medical record, but if you swear by God it didn't happen in the service, they don't need to look because you done already confirmed it verbally. Really. We're trying to get our money. It's hard enough for those of us to get our money for stuff that occurred in the service, and then you're going to go in there and tell them you didn't. Okay. Good one. That doesn't make sense. That does not make. Now, well, here goes something else that I've learned. I'm looking up on the effective dates. When the VA makes a determination that a compensation is awarded or is to be paid based on a claim. An effective date is also assigned. The effective date is determined when the benefits are payable. Effective dates can be based on the type of the benefits and the circumstances of the claim. So, that's a new one. How effective dates are assigned, listed below are the most common types of claim that, and generally how effective dates are assigned for each type. One of them is direct service direct service connection. Generally, an effective date for service-connected disability for a disability that is directly linked to an injury or disease that was incurred or aggravated by the military service is the date, is the date VA receives a claim or the date entitlement arose, whichever is the latter of the two. The date entitlement arose means the date the condition was shown to be existed by medical evidence. Oh, really? Oh, really now? Oh, yeah. Uh-oh. There is an exception in cases where a claim is filed within 1 year of separation from the service. For these claims, the effective date will be by the date of separation. So now they're saying that they are now doing them within, the effective date will be the date from separation, so that has changed. But according to Title 38, you know, it's a different story. So Title 38 says effective date, well, once you file within a year of the date, I got to read it again, but it told me back to the, if you got, we got that in training. I apologize. When I went through service officer training, they told us if you put your claim in within a year getting out of service, it's supposed to go back to the effective date that you were diagnosed. But I got to go and research it again because this is something different. Reopening claims. Normally, the effective date to reopen a claim is the date of a receipt of a claim or the date entitlement arose, whichever is the latter of the two. But whenever you, here it is. There is some law changes. Okay. The effective date for reopening a claim normally starts there. The date you reopen the claim, that's when it starts. But if you already have a claim in, you don't start a new claim. Sometimes you may have to reopen. You don't start a new claim. You just reopen the claim from where it's at. And if it's within a year, you just do a notice of disagreement. But sometimes it takes the VA a long time to even make decisions on your claim anyway. So that's why it's very important to keep copies of all of your denial letters. It's very important to keep copies of all of your denial letters and all of your, any correspondence you get from Veterans Affairs, it's better to keep copies of all of it. That's why I always, because when you, if you put a claim in 2001, here it is almost 2016, so you got a letter saying we received your claim. You got a letter saying we're working on your claim. You got a letter says, we need more information. All of them have different dates. But every year or every time you get a correspondence, you save it. Because that's going to be what determines your effective date as well, how far they take you back to compensate you. So that's why I always ask people to keep copies of your stuff. Any correspondence, denial letters, any of that stuff. It's very important to do that because that's your proof that you did not let your claim lapse. once you left your claim lapse, they will close it. They will shut it down, I mean. And if you wait 2 or 3 years to come back to respond, then they're going to shut your claim, after 2 years. But as long as you're receiving a correspondence from them, even within the 2 years that they say you didn't file and you got your letters, that's your proof. That's the evidence. And that comes under irremarkable error on their part, so they have to accommodate you. So, I can't stress it enough to keep all your paperwork. And try not to wait two or three years to come and follow up on the claim. Do it within 9 months. 9 months, you want to send something in writing, and you save it yourself. Again, they're going to e-benefits, computerize everything, so it's always to have a paper copy and one saved to your email account. Believe me, because if the computers crash, as they sometimes do, you've lost everything. So if you got a paper file, you can't go wrong. You won't go wrong with a paper file. Because these computers crash and viruses and whatever of them, and the stuff that's going on in the country today, you want to cover you. So, and then they got this thing here called liberalizing law change. So if there's a change in the VA law regulations that allow for VA to pay disability compensation, the effective date may be assigned in the following ways. If a claim on the initiative of VA within 1 year from the effective date of the law, or on the request of the claimant, is received within 1 year from the date of the new law regulation, the effective date may be the date of the change of the new law and regulations. If more than 1 year has lapsed since the change in the law or regulation, the effective date of 1 year prior to the VA owns review, or 1 year prior to the claimant's request for a review, may be assigned as effective date. So
Yeah, we have a caller.
Okay.
Hold on. Caller, are you with us?
Yes, hello.
Caller, are you with us? Good evening.
Yes, good evening. This is Richard. I just signed on the line about 15 minutes ago. Okay, how you doing, Ron?
All right.
Okay, I'm going to continue to listen. Thanks. It's good information. Good night.
Okay. All right. Hang in there. All right, go ahead, Marilyn.
Dependency and annuity compensation. For claims based on the death in service, the effective date will be the first day of the month in which the death actually or was presumed to have occurred. Oh, that's new. If the death occurred after service and the claim is reviewed within 1 year of the veteran's death, the effective date will be the first day of the month in which the veteran died. Excuse me. If the veteran death occurred after service and the claim is received after 1 year of the veteran's death, then the veteran's death is the date of the once they receive the claim. So I knew that hadn't changed that much. So if they die after 1 year of service, then the effective date of the claim will be the date you file the claim. And same thing with any other claims you're filing with them. Same thing with any other claim. If you file it within a year, the claim is really accepted the date you file the claim. It's the start time. error. If the VA finds an error in the previous decision, the effective date of the new decision will be then dated from which the benefits would have been payable had not it been an error. Again, this is what I'm talking about when I say once you file a claim with Veterans Affairs, go to Walmart, dollar store, I don't care, and get you a bucket. Because everything you get from VA is going in that bucket. Don't got to be in no special order, but it be in there. So if you put a claim in, again, I'm going to say if you put a claim in 2001, for example, if you put a claim in 1969 and you never let that claim lapse and you can show all your paperwork where you either been denied, we're working on your claim, we need more information within every year, and you can produce it. That is the evidence, and that is the proof to find the error, which is considered unremarkable error on Veterans Affairs. See, we have the burden of proof. We have the burden of proof. We have to prove our case. You know, you would think our service organizations were doing it, which, matter of fact, depending on how long you've been with the service organization, they should be able, and I'm going to use it loosely, they should be able to pull up a record of history as far as your claim process. That's only, I mean, that's one thing good about having them. They should be able to go back and find the beginning date and all your paperwork that you got from Veterans Affairs. Because if you have a service organization, whatever you get from VA, they get a copy. But you can go in there and ask for it, and I guarantee you're going to tell you they ain't got it. They don't have it. But trust me, your service organization has a track, should have a track record. Once you sign them power attorney of your claim, everything you get on your claim, they get. Whether they do anything to help you, they have a track record. You should be able to go in there, like I said, in any service organization that's representing you and get a copy of all of your denial letters, your original, well, if you did your original claim through them, they should be able to start from your original claim up to today's date. I did my original claim, I think, through DAV. That was back in 1991. They should have a record of it, but that's neither here nor there. Because sometimes, you know, after a certain period of time, they stuff get missing. But, you know, that's a service they should have for you. But so for you all that just joining these service organizations within the last 5 or 6 years, you need your paperwork, go to them, and they should have it on file. They should have any correspondence you get, they get. But they'll probably tell you, we ain't got it. But anyway, that's that one. Now, increases. The earliest date as of which is to factually ascertainable that an increase is in disability had occurred if the claim is received within 1 year from such a date. Otherwise, the date the claim. So if you're requesting for, and that's why I tell you, if you get 10% this week, if you get 10% on Monday, Friday, you should have your increase in. Because then once you get your increase in from that date, they're going to go back to the event, to the date that you were, they supposed to go back to the date that they awarded you the disability. So if you put a claim in 2001 and you put an increase in if you got a increase 50%, if you got a disability of 50% in 2000, January 2000, January 1st, by January, you have a year to request for your increase. But the sooner you do it, the soon as it's logged in. Then, to not get caught up in the 1 year within, I always tell veterans, within 10 months, you write a letter. If you have not gotten your increase, you write a letter. Rick, checking on, you don't write a letter. You do it on a VA form, 21-41-38, statement to support a claim. You put it on that thing. I'm checking on the status of my increase that I put in January 5th, 2015. You make sure you keep a copy. If you're doing it through eBenefits, you make sure you save and print a copy. And put it in your Walmart bucket. And wherever you got some people, put it in there. You can always go back and get it. That way, you have a written paper trail on the status of your claim, status of your increases. If you disagree, you do a notice of disagreement. But you have a paper trail of written communication. That phone call is not it. It's good to call them, fine. But if you call back and say, well, you know, per our conversation, I'm trying to check on the thing. They don't know nothing about that conversation. You had it. Trust me, been there, done it. That's why when they say on the notice of disagreement form, would you like to be called? No. I want you to communicate me in writing. We're not doing phone calls. Emails, writings, whatever, because you can print out emails. So, however, and even like I said, now they're trying to, eventually we're going to have to go straight eBenefit. You go eBenefit, you copy that email out. When you do a claim on eBenefit, you print a copy, you save a copy to your email, but you print a paper copy out. Cover yourself both ways. And then you put that paper that you printed out into your Walmart VA paper bag, paper container. You're going to have a record. Don't have to be in no set order, whatever, however you want to do it. But paper trail and in writing is the key, as much as you can. That way, when they say, well, we have not heard from you or we didn't get your letter, which is their favorite thing. I try to send stuff through them and make them sign for my stuff now because I'm tired of hearing you never got my paperwork. Now, when you're doing through eBenefits, can't help you. We got a caller?
No, I said something's wrong if they're telling you you don't have your benefits, but that's why you need to send everything certified, return receipts. That way you know that they're not playing.
I can't tell you how to respond when you're doing it. I do eBenefits, and I print that same thing off and send them a copy too. Because if you send the eBenefits alone, because I'm hearing a lot of veterans saying they're sending their stuff to eBenefits and they're saying they never got it. How you never got it? It's in the computer. It's going to get to you quicker than the postal mail, so I don't know. I don't know anything about eBenefits. I don't know what I'm going to do when they go strictly eBenefits. And be careful, veterans, be careful. The VA is, you have a claim already in file. Let's say you put a claim in for PTSD, depression, back pain, type 2 diabetes, okay? Now, they award you for the PTSD at 50%. The other stuff is pending. And then you come up with you got the diabetes. So now you don't come up with neuropathy, which is secondary to the type 2 diabetes. So now you want to file a claim for the neuropathy. Okay? Do not do a 21-526EZ. Do not do a 21534EZ. Do not do a 21-56 534EZ. Do not touch it, because if you, that claim is for people who never filed a claim before, but have their medical records. That's what that claim is for. If you file a claim and you have a claim on file and you're receiving a percentage, and the other three are being pending, and you file a new claim, you just close the other claims that are pending, so you probably won't find those claims in the records anymore. Because once you file a new claim, everything else drops. It's no longer in action, and they're only going to work with the new claim that you have filed. So please be very careful. If you are filing a new, if you're being compensated 50% for PTSD and you want to file a second neuropathy secondary to your type 2 diabetes, you do it on a 21-526B. That way you can put an increase for that PTSD at the top line. You ain't got to respond to the diabetes, not less. Where it says new claims, I'm checking on the status of my type 2 diabetes, my back pain, and high blood pressure. Then you go on down to secondary conditions. I'm filing a claim for the secondary conditions. You just put neuropathy. That's a secondary. And I always put to either type 2 diabetes. If I have both high blood pressure and diabetes I'm being compensated for, then I'm putting neuropathy secondary to type 2 diabetes and high blood pressure, or either HBP in cap letters, high blood pressure, the initials. Because they don't give you enough lines to write everything on it. So, and if you get in that situation where you have to, if you have more, requested more increases than the lines available, then you can use a 21-4138 to put increases of disability continue and go on from there. If you got a lot of new disabilities and you don't have enough, and there's not enough lines under the increase, then you put claim for new disabilities continue. Things like that. Same thing with secondary conditions. If your secondary conditions file, fill up the two lines that they give you, then you can put also on that form, secondary conditions continues as follows, and attach it to the 526B as in boy. And then on the when you finish at the bottom of the 21-426, then you can also put at the bottom, this is a continuance of VA form 526B, didn't have enough line to add all illnesses, and that will be acceptable. A lot of this stuff is how you word it and write it, too. You cannot use a 21-4138 to do a notice of disagreement, request for increase, or to file a claim anymore as of February the 24th, 2015.
We've reached the end of the show. Do you want to go on a little bit longer, or?
Yeah, we can go like another 15 minutes because I want to do this last paragraph. It's called Disability Due to Death.
Okay.
Disability of Death Due to Hospitalization.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay. There's also one more section of this effective date. If disability is called disability or death due to hospitalization. Disability is the date that the injury or aggravation was suffered if the claim is received within 1 year after the date. Otherwise, the date will be claimed as received. So if you get a disability while you're in that injury or aggravation while you're hospitalized, you can file a claim for that. but, you know, do it within a year after the aggravation. I didn't know that. Then if I knew about the death. If a veteran dies the first day or month in which the veteran death occurred, if the claim is done within a year of the death, it'll be. Otherwise, the effective date will be, if it's a year after that date, it will be, the effective date will be the date the claim is received, which I've been saying all night. And I believe this hospitalization death, applies. Let's say you go to the VA hospital and it's out of their realm of treatment. Like some heart cases, they're taking them from DC VA and send them over to Washington Hospital Center or Georgetown. So you're in the hospital as a result of their transfer or their referral, and you die there. You're covered under the you die there. You're covered under the VA. You can refile a claim, and it's under that. Or you being at a facility that the VA has authorized. Let's put it like that. An authorized non-VA facility by Veterans Affairs, and your injuries or illness are aggravated. You can file additional claims. So. And it comes within that. That's for me, Dr. George?
Yeah, okay. Well, folks, we are glad that we could be with you one more time, and we have had a full show today. We will be back in touch with you tomorrow and Friday. We look forward to a full broadcast schedule, and we want to thank everybody for tuning in.
We'd like to send a special shout out to Mr. Richard, Sergeant Richard. Send a shout out to him for checking in with us. We really appreciate it. He's one of our faithful listeners, and we really, really appreciate him checking in with us.
I have a question, if possible.
Yes, sir.
Sure. The last statement you were making in regards to the hospitalization, I have a veteran friend who died back in May from liver cancer that he believed that was a direct result of his military service back in the 70s. And so,
okay, but was service connected for it?
You know, he only had gotten a claim in and been service connected for high blood pressure.
Okay, so he wasn't service connected for the disability. And I'm glad you brought that up because these have to be service-connected disabilities of 0% or better.
Well, if how can you make the linkage, or who would it take to be able to make that?
There again, you have to file a claim. And hopefully the claim person, I mean, see, this is why when I do my claims, I file for everything. If the veteran don't tell nobody he got a liver condition, he bleeds from the service, nobody knows it. We don't know it. So the veteran, that's what I'm telling you. When you go to file your claim, you file a claim for everything. A person doing the claim don't know what you have or don't have until you tell them. Same thing I say about getting veterans are trying to figure out, well, how come I keep getting denied? You say you have an illness. You filed a claim for back pain, but you home taking Tylenols and not going to the emergency room or to the walk-in clinic to complain about it and let the VA know that it's still bothering you. They don't know. So then you mad at the VA because you're not getting money. They're not psychics. If you don't tell them you have a problem, they don't know it. And even whenever if he filed a claim and didn't tell nobody he was filing a claim for a liver, or he had a liver disease, nobody knows it. You have, when you go to file a claim, you have to tell people what's going on. You go in there and say, oh, I want to put a claim in for PTSD. Well, most service officers, that's all they're going to put you in is for PTSD. Me, I put you in for PTSD, depression, anxiety, and readjustment disorder, because all those is that's a four-deck of deal. All of them hang out together. So I know this. So I automatically put you in for all of it.
Okay, so for example, if the veterans, when the VA pulls the veterans' medical files from the service, and they see that you have had a traumatic occurrence, is it their responsibility, or do they have due diligence to put in the claim for the veteran?
Nope. Not their responsibility. It's the veteran's responsibility. No. Now, the only way you'll get compensation for a claim that you did not file, you go on a compensation exam, and the compensation and the examiner see something and document it, then yes. But other than that, no. The veteran has, that's what I'm telling you. You got to tell people what's going on. No, they're not going to do that for you. They're not trying to give you the money as it is, and you actually think they're going to go out and put a claim in? They know that people go to war got PTSD. That's a known fact. But if you don't say you have it, they don't know it. Everybody that go to war don't want to admit that they have PTSD. Not war, anybody in the military. A lot of people in the military do not want to admit that they have a mental condition. A lot of them don't even want the compensation for it because of whatever their lifestyle is. So you can't just assume that a veteran wants the compensation. You can't just do that. I do a claim. A lot of veterans don't want to be been in stressful situations in the military, but they don't want to file a claim for PTSD and depression because they have a gun license. So you just can't assume that. And they think that they're going to lose their gun license. You're going to lose your gun license if you're not drawing attention. If you're not been treated for suicide or being having anger issues or making threats or doing anything violent, you ain't going to lose your gun license. But then you ain't going to get no money for PTSD because it's not that severe. You make it 0%. So... So the VA just can't assume that you want to be compensated for a disability because of the different circumstances. You got some people that know they got liver disease and don't want to be compensated for it. They don't want to admit they have a problem. So you can't just assume that the veteran wants to be compensated for it. That's why it's the first line of defense with veterans' benefits is the service organization, not us. The VA is not the first line. Okay. The VA is not the first line of defense when it comes to claim. I mean, the service officers are your first line of defense when it comes to veterans' claims. Okay. They can't just say, oh, well, you know, this veteran has been in a stressful situation. But they can't file the claim. The veteran has to file the claim. It's our response. And it's people like me who assist veterans with their benefits. I'm the one that has to initiate that. I have to initiate it. Do you have a history of military sexual trauma? Veterans have and don't even, and then you gotta look at it like this. A lot of veterans don't know a lot of stuff that they can and cannot be compensated. So number one, they're not gonna step up to the plate. So that's why we get on this that's why I get on this radio show and talk like I talk and put the information. Because a lot of veterans don't know that. They don't know they can file a claim for that, for sexual trauma. They don't know it. And a male veteran really don't think they can do it because, number one, they're not even going to admit that it happened.
Well,
so that's what the deal with that veteran. No one knew he had a problem. He didn't file a claim. And like I say, he probably didn't know he could file a claim for liver disease.
Well, he was sick and near death when I got involved.
Well, he has to ask for it, sir. I can't just assume that he wants a disability because he's near death. I can't do that. It's not my, I can't do that.
No, no, that's not what I'm asking. I understand your point of view, but nonetheless, I still have to, you know, I'm still trying to get ideas on ways to help the veterans despite.
They got to want to help themselves too, sir. You know, they got to want to help themselves. See, I had a two-day seminar. Remember, 18 veterans come, so please don't come for me with that. And I did all I could do to get it out. But did anybody show up? No. So, you know, really? You have to, you know, I...
Okay, I understand your point. Okay. So,
okay.
So as
you
far
can...
as with the, what his widow can do, the only thing she can file for is what? The widow's, what, pension?
If it's not, sir,
he was already receiving the connection. He was receiving, he was receiving 10 or 20% service connection for high blood pressure.
But was that, well, let me ask you a question. Was the high blood pressure a contributing factor?
I think it was. I'm trying to help her go get his medical records.
No. You got to look at the death certificate. Tells you what the contributing factors were. Remember the
Okay, I understand. Okay, right. All right, I haven't seen the death certificate. So perhaps
so
it is.
Because when the wife sent to me, when her husband died in a car accident, and the VA denied her because the cause of death was the car accident, but he was getting 40% for heart condition. And the contributing factors on the death certificate said heart condition. So that's how she got it. I used the contributing factors, the award, and the witness.
Now that's the whole point of me raising this question, because you gave me some information by asking me contributing factors. Now I got something to talk to the widow about, because I don't know what the death certificate says. Now, maybe the death certificate does say that, that it was, you know, his high blood pressure was a contributing factor. Now, so I'm just, you know,
saying,
so thanks. I appreciate that info.
Hello?
Yeah, I'm here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, so I'm on the radio. I'm on the radio. I'm on the radio. You got to call me back.
Okay.
No, not you. But what I was saying is, you got to look at the contributing factors. I would have to sit with her and go over the. Death certificate. I would have to sit with her and go over that and read everything. And then I would have to sit and read, because the only thing he was service connected. Well, how come I'm just meeting him? Is that the only thing he was service connected for, was high blood pressure?
Yeah, that was the only thing. And I had taken him in his last month of his death.
Well, yeah, if I had got a hold to the claim would have still be going on, because he had got the claim in prior to the death of the veteran. We had this conversation. So, see, if you get a claim on file prior to the death of the veteran, and the veteran dies as a result of that particular claim, the wife or whoever the the representative for the veteran can continue to file the claim, because it may be determined that particular could have been related to the veteran's. It could have been service connected.
Right, and so I'm working with the spouse to go into the regional, to the office. This is out of state. It's up in Delaware. To go in
The lady I helped lived in, and I never met her in my life, but she lived in Illinois, Mounds, Illinois. Never met the woman.
Okay.
But she can go to the regional, and the first thing they're going to do is turn her away. I'm going to tell you how that works.
No, she needs to go there
okay, you know what? I'm done. Ain't my show. Okay, y'all handle that. I'm out of it. But I'm just telling you that, and I'm not telling you from hearsay, but you'll be calling me back and say, oh, you know what, you were correct.
No, but you didn't get to finish my statement.
It's just, okay, go ahead.
Okay, what I was saying is, you know, the widow wanted to go in because she didn't have access to his files. So she wants to go in and, if possible, get a copy of his VA file, then go to the hospital and get a copy of his records. So she needs to take the marriage certificate to show she's married to the veteran.
Okay, but my question is, what files do she need? Okay, files is she going in there looking for? What VA file is she going in there looking for? Because if she hadn't filed a claim for it, it doesn't make a difference what file she goes in, sir.
Well, he said that he had put in a claim for PTSD. Now, this is what he told me out of his mouth before he died. Now, so I don't know if that's the reason why she needs to go to the VA as his widow.
Was the PTSD related to his death?
Yeah, his PTSD was related to his death because he was one of the men, the few men that I know that admitted to me out of his mouth before he died that he had suffered sexual trauma. I took him to the Washington VA, and his medical doctor saw him, and he told her, she wrote it down, and she sent him straight to trauma services, and he talked to a psychiatrist, told the psychiatrist, and the psychiatrist wrote up a report with the diagnosis.
Okay, but you said, okay, so what did the man die from? Let me ask you that, because I don't want to.
He had liver cancer, and it was critical. But I don't know what the death certificate says.
Okay, that's the first thing y'all need to find out, okay? Because just because he has the liver cancer may not be the cause of the death.
Right.
So that's the first thing y'all need to find out is the cause of death before you run and say it's not service-connected.
No, I'm not going to say that. Don't say those things. I don't use that phrase.
Okay, well.
I say it is service connected until it's proven differently.
You don't know that. You don't know the cause of the death, so you can't say it's service connected. I'm telling you, you got to have your Okay, let me stay out of that. But I'm just saying. That's all I'm saying. You got to know the cause of death before you can determine whether or not it's service connected. That's all I'm saying.
Okay.
Because it may not be service connected. And his PTSD may not have anything to do with his death. Because if he died from lung cancer, he didn't die from PTSD.
If he died, he had liver cancer.
If he died from liver cancer, then PTSD was not his cause of death. And that makes it no relationship to the death. Thank you. How are you doing?
If he had a traumatic experience of sexual trauma in the military, and he self-medicated himself with alcohol and drugs while in the military, and as a result of him self-medicating, trying to deal with the sexual trauma, he developed hepatitis C or hepatitis disease of his liver.
Is he service connected for the drug abuse?
No.
All right, then. So not service connected.
He was treated by the VA over 30 years ago.
Okay. And the VA apparently must have got it under control because he's not service-connected for it, sir. You have to be service-connected at the time of the death, not conveniently service-connected. You got to be service-connected at the time of the death. Now, I'm telling you the same thing the VA is going to tell her when she get up there in front of him, so. That's what I'm saying. You got to have your ducks in a row. You got to know what you're doing when you're coming in for them. You got to have your ducks in a row.
Well,
I'm just saying. I'm not trying to discourage you. I'm just trying to show you the broad picture. And so, because you have a disability, because you have an injury or illness in the service does not mean you're always going to be compensated for that. So that's number one.
That's the debate I want to have with you. I'm simply saying that she needs to
I'm not arguing with you. I'm laying the facts.
Okay.
You both to me, so I'm laying the facts.
And she needs to get access to the medical records.
Let her get them. Go ahead and get them. Go ahead. It's your choice. I think you should. I think that's a wonderful idea.
But
just keep what I said in the back of your mind, okay?
Okay.
I'm telling you this because people don't tell veterans this. Then their family's going in there thinking that they can file a claim and the veteran was never service connected for it. Then you're saying, oh, no, that's all. All I'm trying to tell you, so do not be surprised when they tell you he was not service, the death was not related to his service connected disability.
Right. All I'm doing is, suggesting that she get the records because he started saying that he had filed a claim for PTSD. He didn't produce
it. He filed a claim. That don't mean he got it.
Okay.
I understand what you're saying. I hear you loud and clear. That don't mean he's service connected for it because he filed a claim.
I understand your point. I'm not saying that, it is.
I'm clarifying because somebody else listening may not have that clarity.
Okay, I understand that. So the only way to find out is she needs to go down there, find out, did he file a claim, get his records and see what was filed or not filed. That's all I'm saying.
Well, she can do
what
he to find out.
Do you have any knowledge on this process for the spouse pension that she needs to file for as a result of him being 20% service connected?
I'm just telling you, okay, you do it your way. I'm saying my piece, and you do it your way.
Did you hear my question?
Very nice to know how that turns out.
No, I'm saying, what does she need to get to file for the spousal pension?
First of all, you have work to do. Okay, go ahead and get it. I'm not going to keep debating this with you. Go ahead. You'll find out what I'm talking about as time goes on. You go ahead. You run that show. I'm out of it. Because we're not on the same page with this, and I don't want to keep going back and forth with you on what she's going to go through. So you just prepare her. And ain't no need her to get upset when they say no.
Marilyn, I was asking about spousal pension. Do you know how
I told you. Spousal pension is, you said that the woman won't apply for it. So
the veteran was service-connected for 20% for high blood pressure at the time of death.
And if that was not, okay, you know what? You're right. Okay, so what is it you want? She can file for a pension, okay?
Okay.
And if her income is over the whatever the VA qualifies under pension, she will not get it.
Oh, okay. Thank you. I didn't know what that was. The criteria for that.
No, hear me out. Let me clarify this. When you applying for widow's compensation disability, there are two types.
Right.
There's a pension and then there's compensation. Most people want the compensation.
Oh, okay. Go ahead.
So that's
okay.
All I'm saying.
Okay.
People want the compensation. Because the pension, if you're making a certain amount of money, you don't qualify for it. But
okay.
The compensation is yours if it's from a service-connected related death. That's why I was telling you all I was telling you.
Okay.
You just
now,
go up and ask your car.
Now I understand your point of view. Okay, thank you. So, Paul, the compensation is only if he died from a service related condition. Okay. Oh, okay. Got you. I got you now. Well, thank you.
You're quite welcome.
All right. Thank you so much for the clarity. Whoa. Okay. Whoa.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
That's
why I don't want to get nobody's hopes up.
I'm just saying I'm not trying to get her discouraged, but I want to know I want her to know what she's going into when she's asking for what she's trying to find out.
Right. Okay.
Okay. That's what I'm saying. It's not. Yeah, I mean, I'm just going from the veterans' wives I've helped in the past.
Yeah.
I can only go from my experiences in fighting this battle.
Mm-hmm. Right, I understand. So you all are having the telephone blog tomorrow and Friday, same time, same phone number?
Yeah, but it's not going to be disability related.
What's the topic tomorrow and Friday?
He's going to tell you in a minute, cause I have no clue.
Okay, well, thank you. You did a great job tonight, young lady.
Thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
Dr. George? Oh, wow.
Yeah, I'm here. Yeah, we'll be back at 2300 Zulu tomorrow. We want to thank everybody for listening in and sharing with us. We will be back, and we'll see you then.
No. And see, he don't know what he's doing.